somos amigos.
What up, everybody? It's your boy Duke. Welcome to Talking Soccer Podcast, episode 43. Vamos amigos. And we have an awesome podcast today. We have the number two DFS soccer player in the world coming on. Pew, pew, pew will be joining us here in just a little bit. That interview will be later in the podcast. He's an Arsenal fan, so I'm interested to hear his thoughts on the state of Arsenal and their manager search. But before we get to even the intro, what the hell do you guys do when you get a bad haircut? I almost shaved my head today. I went to my usual spot, had the same guy I had last time, right? It's an awesome old school spot. You know, got the little red, white, and blue twirly thing on the outside. It's just literally called barbershop. They do the straight razor on the neck, the warm towel on the face. They massage you when you're warming up. It's that kind of place, right? But this guy, this freaking guy, I say, look, man, a little bit less than half off the top. I do kind of a fade up. I start with a 1.5 on the bottom, but just fade it up, part it here. Pretty standard haircut, right? Or so I thought. Literally the same exact thing I asked for last time. And I'm 99% sure I had this guy last time. And it all started fine. He's starting the haircut, top of my neck, starts the fade with the lowest guard. He's working on that. And then suddenly he just stops. He's changed guards a couple times. He just stops, grabs the scissors, and starts working on the top of my head. Look, I've had 6,000 haircuts in my life. I know typically you finish, or at least nearly complete, the fade before you wet and start cutting the hair on top of your head. So I'm thinking, this is odd. And then I notice his hands are shaking like he's Michael J. Fox. Like, no offense. And I'm thinking, well, this isn't great, but what do I say? Like, dude, are you hungover? Why are you shaking? Are you going to be okay? I'm trying to remember if last time his hands were shaking, but like we all do, I just kept my mouth shut and said, how bad can it be? Let him do his thing. Well, then he goes back to the blades, and here's where it goes really downhill. He gets a little bit larger blade, and he's doing the fade. Gets a little bit larger blade, he's doing the fade. Thinking, all right, this is going fine. I'm looking at my phone, checking some scores, trying to get some lineups, get some bets in today. And all of a sudden, he takes that blade guard and goes like all the way up the side of my head, way past the part that I was talking about. I no longer can comb, you know, the hair on the side of my head. I'm thinking, this is bad. This is bad for your boy Duke. And then he goes back to the scissors, but he's not like grabbing the hair and cutting the scissors right by your fingers. You know how they do that? They pull your hair up and then they get the scissors and go right by their fingers. Makes it all about the same length, looking good. This guy's free balling it, just freehand, cutting into the hair on my head. I got one hair that's sticking super far out. Doesn't try to comb it down, just cuts it off. Just literally cuts it off. So what do you do when you get a bad haircut? Because I didn't say a word. And of course, I left him a tip. Because you can't just not leave him a tip. It's the same guy who cut my hair. It's the dude checking me out. So here's a couple bucks, you know, $7, whatever it was. Oh, I almost shaved my head today. So instead I get home, you know, I have my own clippers because I used to cut my brother's hair way back in the day. So I bust out those rusty things, try to clean it up. But long story short, it is hat month for your boy Duke until we get this thing straightened out. But what do? You're not going to say anything, right? What am I, Vinny? From Jersey Shore, I'm going to say, no, dude, stop messing up my fade. I don't care. I'll just wear a hat. That's my solution. What do? I'm too nice. But anyway, it is your boy Duke. You can find me on Twitter at Duke DFS. Of course, DFS standing for Daily Fantasy Soccer. And like I mentioned off the top, number two daily fantasy soccer player in the world coming on this afternoon. You can find all my information over at elitefantasy.com. Of course, all my sports betting information over at elitesportsbetting.com. You know what? I want to ask you guys another question about betting, because like you, in my core, I'm a degenerate who loves action, right? I love to win, but I love action. But you know what I hate? Losing. I freaking hate losing. I hate losing way more than I like winning. And I'm sure some psychiatrists can diagnose me immediately with some issue based on that. But seriously, I can't stand having a losing day. You know, whether it's a unit or 100 units, it's a losing day in my opinion. So here's my question to you. When do you press the action? If you're a better, if you're a sports better, doesn't have to be soccer. When do you press the action? Do you press when you're hot, trying to ride that hot hand, or do you press when you're down, trying to make up for what's seemingly a bad day? Things just aren't going your way. Because for me, those are the two types of gamblers, and there isn't much in between. And I emphasize gamblers, not professional modelers, right? Not quants, not quantitative analysts, not guys who live and die with their model and don't ever sway from it. I'm talking about gamblers. Because those model folks, those guys and girls are robots. They're not gamblers. Gamblers, we sway, baby. We sway. And so those are the two types I kept thinking back on over the course of my career. And it's extremely clear which one I am. I'm the guy who presses when I'm losing. And my statistics bear it out. It's good news and bad news. On days when I'm losing, my bets increase. On months when I'm losing, my bets slow down. So for me, this is a clear indication that I'm not so much chasing, which is bad. You don't want to chase, as feeling out the edge. Am I seeing the board clearly? Are, you know, my models and my ideas and my statistics bearing out good results, or are they not? And look, I love to live bet the action. I love to find value because often in soccer, when I'm watching a game, I feel like I have a better feel for what's going to happen than a statistical algorithm would kick out, because simply I've watched this game for too long. I've been right too many times. I love to live bet games, and typically that's where I find value. And look, there's not 13-point teasers in soccer betting. We're often left with the option of either not betting at all or taking marginal plays, because in a game with sometimes zero goals, as we saw today with the El Clasico, the margins for error are so freaking small that it's nearly impossible to win. And so when I'm feeling it, my monthly volume may increase a little bit. And when things aren't going well, my monthly volume will decrease a little bit. But in the course of a day, I'll usually take my profit, or when things aren't going well, I tend to press for value within the same day. And that's a little bit what happened today. We had some unlucky bounces go our way. We're also just on the wrong side of some things. You know, it's tough to do a goal scoring prop on a game when it finishes 0-0. Kind of feel like an idiot there. But we were able to press late, grab a two-unit win with Bayern scoring in the 91st minute. Of course, they had a second one there late in the game. And that's kind of how soccer goes, right? Especially live betting. You talk about those margins. You're watching the flow. You know teams will have chances. Will they finish? And if they finish, will they get another one? Because the other team's pressing for the equalizer. So we look at different opportunities. And I was talking to one of our subscribers today. I said, let's look at just the Carabao Cup, bud. You and me, let's look at it. Let's figure out a bet. Manchester City's going to win. Man United's going to win. And they both did. But parlaying those two together, you'd have to bet 5 units to win half a unit. Look, is that going to hit? Probably. Is there value on that line? Is that going to hit more often than not to make up for that 5-unit loss if it doesn't come through? And no, there really wasn't. There are situations where, you know, City's away, they're playing two young center backs, it's cold, it's windy, maybe something goes on there. Manchester United struggle to break teams down if they sit in deep. Of course, Colchester's going to sit in deep. Maybe they struggle to score, and they did in the first half. So is there value in that? No. Well, let's find something else. And he said, credit to him, I like Leicester. And I said, man, I don't know. It's Carabao Cup. They're really focusing on the Premier League, but this is an opportunity for a trophy. In my head, I said all this, not to him. He doesn't care. I said, you know what? I'm staying off it, but you go nuts. He took it. Well, they're up 2-0 at halftime. And then Everton come back, score a goal. 92nd minute, Leighton Baines hits a banger from outside the 18. And all of a sudden, it's 2-2. And then your 3-team parlay, where you could not have been more right on the first two legs, and really on all three legs, is a loser. So what do you do in a situation like that? Do you fold up shop and say, screw this, I'm not betting parlays? Or do you try to find the process? Was your process good? Were you on the right side of these games? And if not, go back and tweak your model. Go back and tweak your line of thinking and get ready to go the next day. And that's what we're going to do this weekend. And I'll be on the opening line on Friday with Benny Ricciardi talking through everything going on this weekend. And for you DFS nuts out there, this is the last weekend for qualifiers for the big Boxing Day contest. And if you don't know what the Boxing Day contests are on both FanDuel and DraftKings, it's really the biggest slates of the year. Huge tournaments, lots of fish come in. We like to fish. We'll throw our bobbers out there. Those things will be going underwater, take tons of head-to-heads, get our edge where we can. But the day after Christmas, everybody plays. And by everybody, I mean the Premier League. All the teams line up, huge slate, tons of options. We don't have a ton of lineup overlap, even in cash sometimes, because there's so many options to play. It's a really awesome slate, and there's some big tournaments. And if you don't want to pay $555 to get into one of these big tournaments, jump in one of these qualifiers over on DraftKings or FanDuel. Last weekend to do that. And, of course, my article will be out on leapfantasy.com breaking down all of these games, all of these slates, all of these betting lines, and, of course, my recommendations for the DFS side as far as plays are concerned. But let's not do that here on this podcast. I got the number two DFS player in the world. I want to hear what he has to say about the current soccer world. So here he is. Let's talk to Pew. All right. As I mentioned, it is time to bring on a special guest. I'm going to start doing this more often. I want to bring on more guests, not just anybody, but people I respect as far as their opinion in the football world. It's the number two ranked DFS player in the world for soccer. Here he is, Pew, Pew, Pew. What's up, my guy?
Nothing much, man. How's it going?
Going well. You're the guy that people probably used to seeing above them on the leaderboard. Let's start there. How'd you get into soccer? How'd you get into DFS, you know, specifically soccer? How'd you get started in all this?
I played soccer my whole life. Was kind of obsessed with the game. Watched a lot of soccer. And actually played poker a bunch. Was a professional poker player back in the day, as a lot of people were, I'm sure, in DFS. And I used to play year-long, the EPL game, for fun. Used to play with some friends. And just kind of it came up because, I mean, I guess with poker and DFS, poker and the year-long fantasy soccer kind of prepared me really well for DFS. And then when it came up, actually a guy that I know, PSU fans, who's a big DFS guy that I knew through poker, told me about it. And so right away I just jumped in from the first slate, really, and man, just started playing. Yeah, and I just kind of had an interesting situation with my job where I kind of was, you know, out of a job, and it was kind of, it just popped up, and I've been doing it ever since, and just enjoy, like, you know, watching a lot of soccer. It's fun.
Seems to be going okay for you. How much of that analytical side of, you know, the poker game translates over to DFS? We hear that all the time.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot of math involved. How much of your process is model versus just taking your overall soccer knowledge and putting that to use?
I think it's a good mix. Like, I would say for me, DFS is probably well suited because of my background. Just watching a ton of soccer, the year long, and poker. I think that poker helps a lot of, like, in terms of, like, the gambling, obviously. But, like, the analytical side helps, like, kind of logical stuff. And I think having a good combination of that plus, you know, just being kind of like a soccer nut for my whole life was just kind of played perfectly into my hands. I'm kind of lucky to have that background, I guess.
Well, that's kind of what sparked all this. Obviously, Arsenal going through a transition here with their manager. You know, you and I were going back and forth on Twitter a little bit. Like I said, I don't want to have just anybody on here, but I respect, you know, the opinions you put out there in the soccer world. So are you an Arsenal fan, Pew?
So it's interesting because since I was a kid, the first team that I was a fan of was Barcelona.
Okay.
Grew up in Canada, didn't get a ton, like, you know, there wasn't as much soccer coverage as there is now. So back then, I didn't even, like, you'd get some EPL, some clips on the weekends on, like, Euro shows. So I kind of started liking Barcelona. And then as I got a little bit older, there was a lot more EPL coverage. And I started watching a lot of EPL. And then, you know, I really liked Arsenal. The way that they played, the style that they had early on was, like, you know, very progressive, very attacking. They had some really good players. So, yeah, you know, I became, like, a big Arsenal fan, and I've been an Arsenal fan. And but to be honest, you know, over the last few years, I've kind of been on strike because of the way that the ownership has been, you know, has been kind of dropping the ball and how they've been treating the fans and how, like, the standards have just dropped off. I kind of have a pretty hardline approach in terms of, like, I still like Arsenal. Like, they still have kind of, like, a place in my heart. But, you know, I think that the management really needs to be held accountable. And I don't think they're doing a great job. up to this point in the last few years.
Awesome, man, because we're going to get into all that here in just a few minutes. But before we do that, it is Wednesday evening, and we had a hell of a day in the soccer world today. We had Carabao Cup. Of course, we had El Clasico. But let's start with that cup first, because the draw has literally just happened as Pew and I jumped on the call here. We'll have Manchester United versus City and Aston Villa versus Leicester here. Did you get to watch the games at all today? Any thoughts from the games today? And then who do you think can take down those two matchups there?
Yeah, I watched the games. I mean, I didn't get to watch them super well because I was kind of – because of the staggered start with the El Clasico starting at 2 and then all the other games at like 2:45 or 3. So I kind of didn't get a good chance to watch a ton of El Clasico because I was kind of still fiddling with the lineups for the EFL Cup. But technically I had them all up and I got to watch most of them. I think City actually struggled a little bit for a while. They didn't really do as, you know, they didn't really stomp Oxford as quick as I would have thought. Oxford actually played pretty well. It was impressive. I mean, their stats are actually not that bad for a team that's like, you know, League Two.
Well, you think back to last year. I mean, City absolutely hammered them last year in the same matchup. But I mean, to your point, I watched the first half of the Barca game.
Yeah.
And then I had on my second TV, I had the City game for 15 minutes or so. And then I switched over to United. So I was going back and forth between those two. But
yeah,
super windy. The field was choppy. You know, City had two young center backs. There's a lot of, I thought City was going to hammer them early, but Oxford looked much more organized than I anticipated today.
Yeah, and Oxford had a chance to attack decently. They had some fairly decent chances. I mean, if you look at City, really, you know, like this is not the normal City, right? Like they had Zinchenko and Foden in midfield. But, I mean, these are still very talented players, and Oxford, you know, put up a pretty good fight. I mean, City won in the end, but, like, it was a little surprising that they didn't really control the game as easily as you would have thought.
Hell, Oxford popped one in. So they're playing United in the next round. United, once again, they won 3-0 against Colchester today, but 0-0 at halftime.
Yeah.
The same old story. Struggle to break down teams who sit. They just lack that creativity. I actually thought Mata looked okay today. I mean, a lot of things didn't come off, but he was constantly available. What the hell is going on with Man United? Certainly they'll have a better matchup against City, much tougher opponent, but as we just saw recently in the derby, suits their game much better.
Yeah, I think, you know, United – so I have a lot of good friends that are United fans, so, you know, we go back and forth about that all the time. And I think, you know, United, they really struggle a lot in teams that play a low block, like as Colchester did today. I mean, I expected obviously they're going to win, but it's not a surprise that they struggled for about, you know, 55 minutes. I think the first goal was after like 55 minutes. Mm-hmm. And I think that, they just missed that creativity in midfield. I think that's their biggest issue. I think you see they do really well against like the good teams, the teams where they can counterattack when they basically can use their forwards on the break. And they're actually pretty good defensively this year. Like they're organized. They cut out shots fairly quickly. They don't allow a ton of crosses. I mean, I'm actually pretty impressed with how well they're doing there, but they still just really struggle against a low block. And specifically today, I think Andres Pereira is just, I mean, he's bad.
He's not good enough.
Yeah, he's not good. And I'm surprised, like, honestly, I know Pereira's younger, so like you want to give him a chance, you want to build him. I would rather see Juan Mata. At least Juan Mata has, you know what I mean? Like he has a little bit of deception to his game. You know what I mean? Like he can pick a pass. Like there's just today Andres Pereira missed a ton of simple passes that he just could not complete. And it's like at this level, you can't really have that.
No. Especially, you know, considering he's limited physically in so many other ways that, you know, you think of a Sissoko who maybe gives a ball away, but then tracks back, tackles, starts to break again. I mean, he's just not that kind of player. But that's almost across the entire roster at the moment with United. And we'll talk about a few players here later. But interesting matchup there. United City, who takes that? And then obviously Leicester Villa. Villa got through thanks to, a scheduling gaffe, basically Liverpool playing in the Club World Cup Championships against Monterrey today. So had to send a youth side. Villa hammered them as they should have. And actually, I don't know if you saw their Twitter account, Pew, but put out a hilarious tweet yesterday. But it was basically
Liverpool?
The Aston Villa.
Oh, Aston Villa.
And it was a video of some, I think it was Michael Owen, who was doing some sort of promotion contest. It was a 13-year-old goalkeeper. So he scores on him, and he's basically like, yay, I guess. And the announcer's like, the kid's 13. He's like, look at all our mentions. So
I did. Oh, I saw that. It said that they said El Mohammedi's celebrating the goal when he's basically against 13-year-olds. Yeah, you have to feel bad for the Liverpool. You know what I mean? Like a bunch of kids. I'm sure you don't as a United fan.
No, I didn't hate that at all.
Yeah. I mean, I thought, you know, it was – I think I really – Aston Villa is a team that, you know, I kind of like. I like watching their games. I mean, they're fun. They attack, you know, like they're not kind of just sitting back. But I think that, you know, I think they're going to get handled by Leicester. I think Leicester is a impressive team. I mean, they've done really well. They've really kind of impressed me this year. They've taken a big step under Brendan Rodgers. And I liked, you know what I mean? I kind of like Aston Villa, and I kind of cheer for them a little bit because they attack, and they're kind of like an underdog team that plays with a lot of swagger and doesn't really sit back. But I don't think I think Leicester's probably gonna take care of them pretty easily. I think United and City. I mean, I gotta say I'm usually gonna go with City, but I will say that United sets up really well against them and has played a couple really good games, and like the last game they played was really impressive
start to finish. There's a little dip there in the middle where it looked like City were getting their footing in the game, but the first half especially, that was probably the best 45 minutes under Ole.
And I think that, you know, I've been pretty low on United for the last couple of years. I was really low on them under Mourinho, but I actually think they've made some positive strides. Like they're very still inconsistent. They're a ways away from making a jump to the top three, to like being a team that's going to come out and dominate and expect to win every game. But you know, like using a guy like Fred and McTominay actually have done pretty well. And in that type of system, if you throw in Paul Pogba, I got to say that's not a bad side. If you put in Pogba, I would say you play all three of them. You play Fred, McTominay, and you let just Pogba roam, I think that's a pretty good side. I mean, I still think, you know, I don't think they're gonna beat out the top two anytime soon, but I think they're gonna be a lot better than they have been.
Well, speaking of Paul Pogba, rumored to be heading to Real Madrid for probably the last 5 years or so.
Yeah.
El Clasico was today, a 0-0 thriller, if you can have one. What'd you think? Overall thoughts of the game. What'd you think?
Overall, I think Barca needs to just get a slap in the face. I think Valverde is a joke. I think he's a terrible coach.
He needs to go, right?
Yeah, I think he needs to go. I think he's been need to go for like 2 years. I think that the way that he's – I think he gets bailed out by Messi. I mean, they have world-class players and they get bailed out. I'm a Barca fan, but like honestly, I just think that they've been playing pretty poorly. Like their numbers, their underlying numbers aren't great. They got, I would say, Real Madrid was the better team today.
Mm-hmm.
That they probably deserved to win. 0-0 is probably fair, but I mean, I would have said if I had to pick a winner, I would go with Real Madrid. And you're at home, and you're running out Roberto in midfield. It's just, come on, man! Like you got to have more pride. You got to go take the game, and it's El Clasico, right? Like, you can't just go and just play defensive. Like, give us a show. That's the one thing, no matter what, El Clasico always usually delivers. This one was a little bit drab. I think a lot of that is down to Barca setting up kind of defensive.
And even late, I mean, who's making the attacking subs? Yep. You know, Fati came on late, but you got Rodrigo, Modric coming in, took out Valverde, which I thought was interesting. Isco comes off, left Bale on, Benzema on. I mean, it was Madrid kind of going for the win.
Yeah, and typically, I mean, if you look over the last few years, like Barca has dominated Madrid. Like Barca has been bad at times, but whenever they played Madrid, it was just like they were a totally different team. And they always like rose the occasion. I mean, they beat them pretty badly without Messi last year. And it's just this year, I mean, Zidane, give him credit. He's actually got them playing pretty well right now. You know, and I mean, I'm not a big, you know, it hates me. I hate to say it, but Madrid is playing pretty well. And it wasn't a surprise that they kind of came to the Camp Nou and did what they did, because they've been playing fairly well over the last two months.
And that's the thing, right? I mean, they started off so poorly. Well, finished poorly last year, obviously. Yeah. Started off so poorly this year. I'm wondering, is this marriage going to end quickly? Zidane's got him playing.
Yeah, no, he hasn't played. And you know, I have always had the opinion that, you know, Zidane, not the best tactician. I think he motivates his players well. Like, he obviously, everyone listens to him because the guy's a legend. Like, right. Growing up, he was, like, my favorite player because he just was such a good player. But, you know, I thought that, like, you know, he got bailed out because he had such an amazing squad. But he's done a pretty good job with a weaker team than he's had before. You know, I mean, he made some hard decisions. Valverde has done really well. I really like him as a player. Yeah, as a young player, like, he's very good. Does everything well. He's kind of, you know, he's sat Modric down, and it's made sense. It works, you know. Benzema is playing phenomenal. Bale's still kind of being a bum. But, you know, other than that, I mean, they have a pretty good team. And Barca kind of just... I mean, it's ridiculous because Barca has so many good players. And you got, you know, Frankie de Jong, who's phenomenal, and Messi. And then how do you play this poorly? I don't know.
Frankie de Jong almost, I mean, you have to make the signing, right? If you get a chance to sign him, you make the signing. A bit redundant, though, with Sergio Busquets. And even though he's been out, I know when they play together, for me, there's one pivot, right, typically in the system. And they're both kind of that position. I know that Valverde's finally moved Frankie back to the left. He's working more off the left, kind of sitting deeper there and starting from there, which has been good.
Yeah.
But to me, they can't play together. Busquets, obviously, did he get hurt in warmups or something? Because he was.
So apparently he had a fever. So they sat him. I think they can play together because I think De Jong is such a phenomenal athlete and such a phenomenal player that even though he was at his best in Ajax playing kind of that pivot, I still think like you can get so much out of him if you just give him the freedom to basically like dribble and do his thing. And Busquets he's on the downslope, but he's still such a phenomenal player. And like with Messi, you don't really need to have your three midfielders be super attacking. So I think it can work. I think there's been games where it's good, but also, you know, I mean, Busquets is like, what, a year away?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just like De Jong is such a good player that I feel like you should be able to make it work.
But just figure it out, right?
Yeah, I think because if you give him freedom, he's basically like an attacking midfielder that plays as a defensive midfielder. He played center back for Ajax some as well. Like the guy can basically just, because he just, you can't get the ball off him. He has like an amazing vision. He does everything well, I think.
But Pew, that's my thing. I think he's, and you know, for me, I started out as a central midfielder and then later in my career was moved out to the wing. And so I had 22 years of, you know, facing my own goal and then facing the opponent's goal and everyone around me. The second I found that sideline to my left, essentially I played left wing.
Yeah.
And all I had to look at was one portion of the field. The game got so much simpler for me. And Frankie, for me, when he's facing the field, so if he's playing that center back role with Ajax or playing that pivot role, when he's facing and dictating, he's so much better. And that's what Busquets does.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think in a sense is he's a phenomenal soccer player. He's still very young. With young players, you don't necessarily have a set position yet. So he's still kind of malleable. And I do think that, like, yeah, ideally, probably what we've seen is his best position is playing that pivot, playing that holding role as a six. But also, I think that, like, he's still one of the best in the world playing the role that he is now, right?
He's
that
good.
So it may not be that you're maximizing, but I think their best team for sure is having them both. And I think also, even though De Jong has been so good there, I want to see him with freedom. Like, I want to see him with someone behind him because he's so good on the ball. But, like, you still can't take as many risks if you're playing that pivot because if you lose it, you're done. And he rarely loses it. But, like, if he has that freedom, like, I mean, it's a joy to watch. I mean, I love watching that guy play because technically he doesn't – I mean, DFS, he's trash, right? Like, mm-hmm. he's not good for DFS.
Right.
But in terms of an actual soccer player, like, he's just so good. I love watching him.
He'd be, I mean, he can walk into any 11 in the world.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think the guy could play. You know what I mean? Like, I think he could be a 10, and he'd be amazing. Like, the guy barely shoots. He plays. He does everything for the team. Like, defensively, he's a stud. You know what I mean? Like, tracking back, tackles, winning everything. But I think, you know, one of the biggest issues is he's playing for Valverde, who does not coach players, does not develop players, does not understand how to develop an attacking system. Defensively, he kind of does. But, like, you just see over and over again that, like, he gets a player and he can't really mold them, coach them. He can't get a system. Like, Coutinho kind of was, like, real bad. Dembele has been real bad. And, like, some of the blame for sure is on these players. But, like, this guy, what is he doing? He's not developing players. Like, so, like, you know, what are we seeing here? Mourinho was very similar, right? Mourinho, very good. But, like, you don't see him developing a ton of young players and making them better. Attacking players, at least. Defensively, a little bit different. Very good defensively developing players, but offensively, it's just like, what are you getting from this guy?
You think he lasts the whole season?
Valverde?
Mm-hmm.
I think he does. I think the board is really weak. I think Valverde is smart. He doesn't piss off the senior players. I think, you know, he plays Suarez, Messi, Pique, no matter what, and those guys have a lot of pull. I think the Barca board is kind of weak. I think he's their guy. And if they weren't going to fire him before the season, after that abomination against Liverpool, it's like, wait, you're not going to fire him now.
Right. Right.
Yeah. You know? I mean, you should have, but I mean, you can only hope, but I think it's like, I think honestly, it's not even just as a Barca fan. It's like, as a soccer fan, this guy is kind of, you're taking, in my opinion, the GOAT and you're basically giving him a defensive system that has 13 shots a game, like at times. It's, come on. You got Griezmann, you got Suarez, you got De Jong. It's like, just let him play. Like, if you had, imagine you had Pep Guardiola there, or like someone like Klopp, it would be insanity. I mean, it would be like, you know, a beautiful to watch, but instead we get kind of shitty soccer.
Well, speaking of board, let's get to your squad, Arsenal. Like I said, that's kind of what brought this on, was they've now fired Unai Emery, probably appropriately.
Yeah.
And are looking for a new manager. So, you know, Pew, as far as your opinion, being a fan of this team, number one, should they have gotten rid of Emery? And number two, should they have had a plan for an immediate replacement if they had, or was it just time to get rid of him and then figure it out from there?
Well, I think both things can be true. They should have got rid of him and they should have had a plan. But Arsenal is a mess. I mean, the leadership in the board, everything is just, it's chaotic. Like, how do you, first of all, I mean, my opinion, he might have been able to, should have been let go probably at the end of the year before. I don't even think he should have been hired, because his resume is not phenomenal. You know what I mean? And then, like, if you're going to fire him, it's like, just have something ready, have something prepared. Like, why are you waiting? These games matter. The more time you have to get in there to get a coach, the better. You know what I mean? Like, I think the biggest thing with Arsenal is, like, there's so many signs that they're just so disorganized. They're just pushing buttons, throwing darts. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of the signings, the contracts, like letting Ramsey's contract run down, not signing him, like Alexis Sanchez, letting that contract run down. Then you re-sign Ozil out of all the guys, maybe not the guy that you want to spend all that money on, you know? And I'm a big Ozil fan. I've been a big Ozil fan. But he's been bad, and he can't – I'm not mad at Emery for sitting him, because, honestly, he can't play. He can't play in this team. The way that the team is constructed, you can't.
No. And, you know, on this podcast, you guys are all used to hearing me absolutely trash Unai Emery for not only his tactics, but his selections, his substitutions, in-game – tactical, you know, ignorance. Basically, he's a bit like Valverde is doing with Barcelona on a smaller scale. Yeah. You know, he's putting a clutch, or he's ruining a clutch on a Ferrari. You know, he's just got this an e-brake on. Granted, he probably shouldn't have been hired in the first place, but you talk about resume, the guy at the top of the list, Mikel Arteta, who has zero resume coaching, do you think he's the right guy for the job? And if so, why?
Okay, so it's complicated, because Arsenal is cheap as hell.
Okay.
So, and the squad is unbalanced. So I think you're under the gun. Like, it's going to be unlikely that they're going to get a top-notch quality candidate. You need somebody that's going to be super hungry, super dedicated, because the squad is a mess. And but you have some very good young talent that you can build around. But you need to do a full rebuild. You got to make some tough decisions. And I think if there's ever a time to gamble, this is the time. Because Arsenal has nothing on the horizon.
Honestly. That's so bleak.
No, it's true. You have a squad of Lacazette, Pepe, and Aubameyang, and you are terrible. So, like, you're not – your offense isn't good. Your defense isn't good. Your squad is a mess.
Outside of that, though – but wait a minute. You're telling me we have Carlo Ancelotti, right? The guy's won the Champions League three times, been to the finals four times, unlimited seasonal championships. Yeah. He's going to go to Everton.
Yeah, but you don't
want Arsenal can't get Carlo Ancelotti?
You don't want Carlo, though. You don't want Carlo.
Why?
Because Carlo is at the point. Like, Carlo has been a great coach, right? Carlo is he's nearing retirement. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not going. And, like, everything that comes out of all these clubs now is, like, he doesn't even run, like, crazy practice sessions. Carlo is not looking.
He's a player's coach.
Yeah, he's a player's coach. He's a good manager. Don't get me wrong.
Mesut Ozil's dream.
Yeah. This is a huge project. You need someone that's hungry, that's dedicated, that's going to basically be in the lab every day, that's going to be, like, managing these players, that's going to be teaching these players. You don't want to sign Ancelotti for that.
He's what, like, about Massimo Allegri? Allegri, five straight titles with Juve. Did the treble once, what, the double all 5 years? He's available.
I would say, yeah, Allegri, I would take Allegri over Ancelotti. I just don't think Ancelotti is a great fit. Allegri, yeah, I you know what? Allegri is pretty good. He is a little defensive. But he's a good manager.
That's important to you guys, right? I mean, the style of football, the way you play, Arsenal has a brand and have for since I've been alive, basically.
Yeah.
That's important.
I think so. And I think, look, if you're going to gamble, because honestly, I would say this is the perfect spot to gamble, because you don't really have a lot to lose, because we're not getting top four this year, by any chance. Give him the season to see what he does. And if you're going to gamble on a coach that doesn't have an experience, take the guy that's working with Guardiola. That is basically everything coming out is that he works hands-on with a lot of players. And he apparently is, like, he's a teacher, right? Arsenal needs that. So I say, if you're going to do it now. Gamble with it now. Don't do an inch. If you could get, like, a guy, you know, that's, like, at the top of the game, yeah, you could do that. But also, Arsenal's cheap. And there's not a lot of these top managers maybe want to take that on. In a new country as well. Arteta has been in the EPL. He knows the league. And a lot of the reports are he's pretty good. And if it doesn't work, it's not that big of a loss. But you could, if you get the next Guardiola, right? That's huge. I mean, because that would be the huge difference for them.
And 110 appearances for Arsenal. Obviously familiar with the club, the way they run things. I mean, so it's low downside, high upside, higher.
Yeah.
Made by a, you know, potentially a cheap board. And it's not official yet, we should say that, but looking that way. Made by, you know, potentially a board, like you said, that's in shambles. Very similar, just, you know, up north in Manchester with Manchester United, both owned by American owners. Giving us a bad name, Pew. I mean, what the hell is going on? We look at, there's three examples I can turn to, right? We have Arsenal with the Kroenkes, who, you know, is much like Arthur Blank, just looks like an evil villain in a movie, you know, with his mustache and his turtlenecks. Then we have the Glazers, who are absolutely hated by United fans, loading the club with debt. But then we have the Fenway Group, who have turned Liverpool from an also-ran who couldn't get it done into the absolute world champions. And what is the main difference between all three of those situations? Structure.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you look at Liverpool, like, geez, I mean, this is a club that's under the Fenway Group is run phenomenally. Like, they have not made a lot of, I mean, originally they made a couple, you know, when they first came in, they were learning, they made a couple missteps. Andy Carroll, you know, for one. But, like, every big signing they've made has been spectacular. And, like, they paid top dollar for Van Dijk. They paid top dollar for Alisson. But, like, who's going to argue that they didn't get amazing value? And they knew exactly what they wanted and they got it and it was spot on. I mean, we want to be results oriented here, right? And be like, well, just because it worked. But like, clearly their process has been really good. And a lot of it has to do with is their structure. Like you said, they have a backroom staff, they have scouts, they have analytic teams that are just doing a phenomenal job. And Arsenal and Manchester United are just kind of skating by on past glories, you know? And I think that's the big difference is that Arsenal, it's a shame because I think the owners kind of got in it to make a profit. And they're like, you know, United Arsenal was at the time probably the two biggest brands in the EPL and they were bought to kind of turn a profit and not necessarily in a serious manner to basically, you know, make this club better. And I think that's the biggest thing. FSG has just done a really good job.
While turning a profit.
Yeah, with also making a profit. Yeah, you can do both. I mean, I think that I'm pretty hard line about like, look, I don't think these owners should just be taking a profit and kind of shitting all over the club. Excuse my French. But, you know, if you're going to do that, then the fans have the right to be like, you know what? I don't want to pay top dollar for these tickets. I don't want to buy these jerseys if you guys are basically just using us as a cash cow and you're not basically trying to set us up to be great. And let's be honest, United and Arsenal have had a huge advantage. Coming into the when the Premier League was really good, they were on top, and they've kind of squandered a lot of it. And Liverpool is kind of City. I mean, they just spent a ton of money, but Liverpool have just been real smart.
Yeah, it's you know I almost take the opposite approach. I'm a business guy at heart, and so you know I understand that you know the P&L's got to look positive at the end of the year for your investors. But to, you know, specifically to Manchester United, to load, you know, a previously debt-free club with hundreds of millions of dollars of debt and not work it down year after year with a set plan to show your fans you're in it for the right reasons is such a slap in the face. Is it wrong? I don't know. I mean, they're business owners. They're business guys who saw an opportunity. Yeah. As a fan, can't stand it. As a business person, be mad at me all you want. This thing's turning. I mean, they're loading the club with debt. They're taking loans out based on the equity that they own. As a fan, I mean, how do you combat that? You stop going to games? It's Manchester United. There's going to be 74,000 there every single week.
Yeah.
Stop buying shirts. They got a billion fans around the world. I mean, I don't know. For me, it's tough.
I think that's the problem. I think we as fans, we're emotional about it, right? Like we're tied to these clubs. We have an emotional tie to these clubs. As when we're young kids, we probably grow up watching Arsenal, watching United, and we're like, hey, you know, like we love these guys. We love Ferguson. We love Wenger. It's great. So we kind of imprint and we attach to these clubs. And then you have these owners that come along, buy the club that we love, that all these people love. And then their motives are to basically turn a profit, which I can't be mad at someone for turning a profit as a businessman. But then, you know, fans kind of have to say, well, what's our recourse? How are we gonna deal with this? Well, the only way you can deal with it is if you basically say, look, enough's enough. We're not gonna pay Arsenal United top dollar tickets. And we're not gonna basically allow you to take advantage of that because it doesn't mesh with what we see as fans. So I think that the only way you fix it, it's tough and most people are not going to do it. And I get that is you kind of just say, you know, I'm not going to, it's a two-way street. It's a relationship, right? Like if you're in a relationship, you expect it both ways. They're not giving it both ways. Then fans got to be ready to be like, you know, we're not going to buy shirts. We're not going to show up to games until you change. Cause each person's got to go for their interests, I guess, you know, and I can't be mad at them as a businessman, but as a fan, you know,
I was so naive though. So naive when they came in. Billions of dollars.
Yeah.
They're used to running, you know, the NFL, multi-billion dollar organization. This is going to be great. Transfers out the wazoo. This is before the City Times, obviously.
Yeah.
But then even City's changed everyone's opinion because now we have people who hate the Glazers so much, they're ready to run to any Saudi prince who has a little bit of oil money just to get them out. It's like we're selling our souls just to get out of a terrible situation.
But yeah, it's kind of like a race to the bottom.
A little bit. A little bit. You know what I mean?
It's like, you know, I mean, like, oh, well, they did that. At first, it was Chelsea, right, with Abramovich, who just dumped a ton of money. And then clubs like Arsenal United are like, hey, we don't just blow money. We're trying to do it fiscally the right way. But then the clubs kind of took it a little further and started taking advantage of the situation and basically not invest. Like, look, United, I will say, you had Alex Ferguson. You had a cheat code that basically did so much with, like, not a ton of money. And then now he's gone. It's like, you need – it's not going to be the same. Like, it's not – you're not going to get – you don't have the same manager that basically plays eight defenders against Arsenal and wins 6-1. You know what I mean? Like, you're not going to have the same guy. So you got to invest. You got to compete. But it's sad because United, they've kind of grinded the fans down. It's like, it's the richest club in the world. And don't get me wrong, Daniel James is a very good player.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's a good pickup. I think Aaron Wan-Bissaka is a very good player. But if you're the richest club in the world, one of the most famous clubs in the world, you got to be doing more in the summer when your chief rivals, Liverpool and Man City, are taking down titles, you know what I mean, in Champions League finals and winning the Champions League. It's like, come on.
It's a bit of a brutal time to be a United fan. And, I mean, a bit like Arsenal, you got to find your identity, right? I think it was a culture reset with Ole. And I don't know if we even could have got the big money signing, but decided to go with maybe two players a little bit more under the radar who wanted to come to Man United. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what happens with Arsenal. Ultimately, I think Arteta will end there. And let's finish up with a little word association here, Pew. I'm going to give you a few players, just interested to get your impressions of them. Just a couple sentences on Matteo Guendouzi.
Good young player, great on the ball.
See a first teamer next year.
Yeah.
First 11, not first teamer.
I think so. I think he's very good. He does some things very well, but he's got to be combined with other people that are going to cover a lot of ground and they're going to be solid defensively, but his deep progression is very good.
Here's a guy who's not going to do that, Mesut Ozil.
Very limited, was a very good player, but Arsenal can't support a luxury 10 at this point.
I was telling someone just last week, if you just saw this Ozil, you would not know how good he was at Madrid.
Yeah.
He was unbelievable.
Yeah. But even if you take the Ozil from Madrid, it's hard to put him in this Arsenal team when you're playing three other forwards and your defensive midfielder is Xhaka and Guendouzi.
Xhaka's trash. Aubameyang.
Great goal scorer, very good player. Probably should be sold by Arsenal.
Sneaky old. Yep. Move him on if you can. Haaland. Let's go the opposite end. Young.
Ridiculous goal scorer. The guy looks like a Terminator. Could be a superstar. We'll see.
I'm trying to figure out if it's form or class, right? Form is temporary. Class is permanent. He's such a young player, but so many of his goals are, to me, they look instinctual, the way he turns his body, finds space. He's just in that right spot. Sometimes you're just in the groove and balls just find your feet and you trip over your feet. You happen to elude a defender. The ball hits your head and you score. Is he that, or is he going to be the Terminator?
He is, for a guy that size and that frame, he's got game. Like, he's got touch. I mean, obviously he's an instinctual finisher from what we've seen so far. It's a very small sample size, but like, he could be real good. He also could just be a flash of the pan and he plays an ultra-attacking team. But, you know, you don't see a lot of guys that size, that young, that have real skills. And, I mean, he's kind of come on the scene. It's like he's worth $70 million.
You think?
Yeah, I would do it. I mean, if I'm United, because I think that's probably why you're talking about, because I know he's moved to United. I do it.
Yeah.
His upside is ridiculous. Like, he could be you need a nine. You need a striker. Why not go for the guy that, like, you know, has massive upside?
Could be.
I mean, he could be really good. I mean, he's fast, he's strong, and he's skilled. He's not just an oaf up there, right? You know what I mean?
So here's a player I'm literally confused about. Anthony Martial.
You know, I used to think that he had like a huge future, but he's been kind of just not super good. I know he wants to play in the middle. I don't think that's his best position.
You think he's better wide?
I think he's better wide. I think Rashford's better wide. I don't think any of them are great in the middle. I think they both should be playing off the left, and that's a problem.
Totally agree. Paul Pogba.
Mercurial genius, I would say. I think he's a good player. If I'm Manchester United, based on what I've seen, I think you're better off selling him for a huge profit and signing a couple more guys. I don't know if he's down for the cause.
Marcelo.
Great player, but Mendy's better now. And Marcelo, as a left back, I see some games where this guy dominated the game from left back, but you don't see very often. Like a couple years ago for Real Madrid, where he was the player. Ronaldo was banging in the goals, but this guy was dominating games from left back, which is unheard of. But I think defensively now he's a liability.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's maybe one of the most fun players to watch that doesn't get talked about enough.
Yeah, I think he's been underrated. He's been at Real Madrid since forever. He was like 15.
Since he was
like, not 15, but like he's been there forever. And he's been a stalwart. I mean, this guy hasn't got enough credit. Like, he should be talked about with Roberto Carlos.
I totally agree. Were you one of the donkeys that played him when he scored and when he had his three assists and got subbed off at halftime? His ownership was like 70%. I had no idea.
I might have. It's, you know, I mean, I definitely dabble in some Marcelo. Like
the play worked. The play worked.
Yeah. I might have had – I can't remember. I definitely remember the game you're talking about. I can't remember if it burnt me or if I was one of the ones that had him.
Yeah, I'm slightly bitter because it definitely burnt me. But anyways, we'll finish with this. Messi versus Ronaldo. We talked about how much Messi papers over the cracks for Barca. Cannot wait. I don't want to wish it away.
Yeah.
But I'm so interested to see what Barca does when he's not there, because right now there are 10 arrows pointed at him with a passing map. Messi versus Ronaldo, who's your GOAT?
Oh, it's Messi. By like...
unequivocally.
A mile. I mean... Messi is the best 10, the best 9, the best winger. I mean, he is – his goals are ridiculous. You know what I mean? Like, he's playing as a 10 now. The guy is the best dribbler, the best free kick taker. I mean, look, Ronaldo was a great goal scorer and a great finish, but, like, his dribbling has been gone for years since he left United. And he's a great player, but, like, Messi can dominate a game without scoring any goals. He played for Argentina in a World Cup, and people talk a lot of trash because he didn't score goals, because he basically dropped deep and created from deep and allowed all that space down the field. So, like, Messi is the best ever, in my opinion, just because, like, the guy he's a cheat code. It's insane. Like, I think the Ronaldo-Messi debate, I don't even think. Like, for DFS purposes, there's a debate, because Ronaldo shoots 12 times a game. No matter what. But I think for like actual soccer, I mean, I got to stop.
It's all Messi. I've gone back and forth 100 times, but it's hard to argue against Lionel Messi in this. I can argue for Ronaldo. It's hard to argue against Messi in this debate.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, he should have, there's like a couple Ballon d'Ors that Ronaldo got that Messi probably should have got. I think that whole thing is whatever, like Ballon d'Ors, but it's ridiculous. Every year what Messi does is insane. And over this last year, Barca has not been great. And Messi has basically been everything.
Well, there it is. Messi, the GOAT from the number 2 ranked DFS player in the world. Pew, it's been a pleasure to have you on, man. We'll have to do it again later.
All right, yeah, for sure, man. It was a lot of fun.
All right, buddy. That's it. Right. Adios, amigos.
All right, peace.